You pick up where we left off several weeks back in the Anuragsagar, which of course is the very major poem of Kabir, which has been and is still being worked on under the direction of Sant Ajay Singh over the past year or so. We had gotten to the point where, in the narrative of the story of the creation, a section called The Fall of Kal, where Kal has pleased Satpurush by doing incredible austerities, and Satpurush has given him, first of all, granted him his first request, which allowed him to live in Mansarovar, or the extreme limits of the creation as it existed at that point. Mansarovar is, of course, Dasvandwar, which on the way up is the first plane past that of the three worlds, physical, astral, and causal. And then Satpurush agreed to give him a void plane where he can create his own universe. In this next section, which is still under the main head of the Fall of Kal, how Narinjan got what he needed to create his universe. And remember, the names of Kal are very significant. Kal, of course, means time. Primary meaning is time. Secondary meaning is darkness. Narinjan means the illusion maker, or he who is beyond illusion. And Dharamrai means the lord of judgment or law. All of these names are anachronistic at this point, that is, all but Kal, perhaps. The use of them, even from the beginning, may imply an inevitability in his fall, which, as we have seen, probably was inevitable at least from the time that Satpurush separated himself into so many parts, because the aspect of himself called time was unable to exist separately without causing trouble. So, what Satpurush had told to Saj, he conveyed to Narinjan. That is, he has given him permission to create now. This permission was given by Satpurush, or God the Father, the Supreme God, was given to him to create the void plane that he had been given. Kabir said, hearing the words of Saj, Dharamrai was pleased. He was happy and a little surprised. There's a big problem, you'll see. Dharamrai said, listen, dear Saj, how do I create the universe? The gracious Lord has given me this kingdom, but I don't know the way to develop it. I know nothing about the inconceivable. Please shower grace on me and tell me its secret. Please convey my request to Satpurush, O my brother, I sacrifice myself on you. How do I create 9 universes as I have been ordered by him? O my God, give me what I need to create the universe. Then Saj went to Satlok, where he bowed to Satpurush again and again. Satpurush said to Saj, O Saj, tell me why you have come. Tell me in detail everything that happened. Kabir said to Dharamdas. Then Saj told Satpurush what Dharamrai had said. He conveyed to him the request that he had made. Then Satpurush ordered this. Listen to my words, O Saj. All that is needed for creation are within Kurma. Remember now, Kurma was the first created son of Satpurush. Taking them from him, Dharamrai should do his work. He should go to him and, bowing his head, should ask him for what he needs. The journey of Saj to Dharamrai. Again, Saj went to Dharamrai and conveyed to him the orders of Satpurush. Go to Kurma and ask him for what you need, bowing your head to him. When you bow down to Kurma and when he showers grace on you, then only will you get what you need. Now, Kurma is a very important figure in Indian mythology, and Anurag Sagar differs very specifically between Kurma and Kurma's son, who is also called Kurma, which will be obvious in the next section. But Kurma is commonly depicted as being in the shape of a tortoise, only gigantic, with 3 heads. And I think that that shape is also significant, as are his three-headedness. It has been suggested that the shape of the tortoise is roughly the shape of the physical universe, that is, the entire collection of galaxies, etc., known to modern science, and perhaps more than is known to modern science, which has not yet perhaps reached the limits of the potentially knowable universe, physically speaking. that Kurama is the shape of that, and that tortoise is the closest image that could be gotten to. The journey of Narinjan to Kurama. Kabir said to Dharam Das, Dharam Rai approached Kurama with happiness in his heart and pride in his mind. He went and stood before Kurama, but he didn't greet him or salute him. But Kurama is like nectar and is happiness giving. He didn't have any anger in him. He was cool and devoid of passion. Swollen with pride, Kal saw that Kurama was very patient and mighty. The body of Kurama was 12 units, and the mighty Dharam Rai's body was 6 units. The word translated as units is palang in the original. Palang is a measurement of enormous size. These entities we're dealing with, it's important always to remember that this is not on human scale. We are dealing with a creation that is both in size and in every other way is beyond our comprehension, truly speaking. And these individuals, while they are certainly individuated, that is, they are entities who are dealing with each other, are nothing like any individuals that we have ever known. So this is one way of conveying this. Dharam Rai walked around Kurama in anger, considering how to get the materials of creation from him. Notice that Kal does not even think, apparently, of doing what he was told to do, that is, to bow down and ask him. If there is any one moment in which it can be said that Kal fell, or that Kal's fall became inevitable, or that he separated himself from God irrevocably, would be this moment. Cause. Kal attacked the heads of Kurama with his nails, and breaking his stomach, air came out. From the 3 heads of Kurama, the dynasty of Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh came out. Now this is not the created individuals of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, or Mahesh, which are created much later by Kal himself. In other words, Kurama, apparently the first created son of Satpurush, contained within himself the latency of all the rest of the creation, and that it had been part of the plan from the beginning for this to come out of him in an orderly and loving way. And Kala's impatience is ruining that. Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, or Shiva, of course, stand for the principles of creation, preservation, and destruction, which have not yet come into being per se, but which apply only to the lower universe. So that when he attacks those 3 heads, the dynasty of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, that is, the potentiality of them, is released. 5 elements came out, including the sky with the moon, sun, and stars. That is probably, however, not the physical sky. All of this refers to the entire creation from the causal plane downwards, the creation of the 3 worlds. Including the sky with the moon, sun, and stars, they all came out of him. Matsya, Sheshnag, Vara, these are all important figures in Indian mythology. And the pillars to support the earth came out, and in this way the creation of earth started. When Kal pulled the head of Kurama, sweat came out. When that drop of sweat spread, the earth started floating on it. Earth probably does not mean, again, the physical universe, although it may on some level, in some sense that I haven't quite been able to figure out. I think it refers to the entire creation of the 3 worlds. As the cream lives on milk, in the same way the earth rested on water. The earth is supported on the teeth of Vara, and in the physical earth, furious winds blow. Recognize the sky as an egg in which consider the existence of the earth. All of this is hard to grasp on a logical basis, one by one, and yet it's reflected in many, many mythologies all the world over, including the poetry of Blake. Even the words that the masters use, And and Brahmand, mean egg and egg of Brahm. And the conception of the causal universe, that is, the 3 worlds, the physical, astral, and causal planes, as a gigantic cosmic egg, is a very widespread conception, and I think a very fruitful one to think on. From the stomach of Kurama, his son Kurama was born, on whom Sheshnag and Vara were erected. Sheshnag, of course, is the primordial serpent, not to be considered as a reptile in any physical sense, but for some reason, just as Kurama is represented as a tortoise, Sheshnag is represented as a serpent, an intelligent and important conscious being. Vara is one of the first incarnations of Vishnu. And the sun Kurma is also considered to be an incarnation of Vishnu. As the masters have often explained, the universe as you go up, in other words, as you go from plane to plane on the way up, many of the things that exist in the lower planes are also found in the higher planes, only on a much higher and, we might say, for want of a better word, larger level. Whereas there is a Kurma in Sach Khand and there is a Kurma in the causal plane. And of course, the truth of the matter is that in reality, the reality of the thing is higher. What is lower is really a reflection. Yeah, reflection is the best way to put it. So that Kurma, when he was attacked and pulled apart, so to speak, so that all of the potentiality of the lower creation was forced out of him by time, then there was also included a reflection of himself existing on a lower level and at a lower stage of consciousness than him. Recognize the head of Sheshnag as the earth, below whom the sun Kurma resides. The created son of Kurma is in the egg, while the original Kurma lives separately in Satlok, where he meditates on Satpurush as before. In Indian mythology, the two Kurmas were not differentiated. The avatar of Vishnu was not considered separately from the Kurma, the primordial Kurma. And Kabir is carefully differentiating here. Kurma said to Satpurush, Nirankar, that is cow, came at me with full force and manifesting his character climbed on my body. He tore my stomach and didn't obey your orders. Then Satpurush said this to Kurma, he is your younger brother. This is the way of the older ones. They should not pay attention to the bad qualities of the younger and they should love them. Notice continually throughout this section, the very great reluctance of Satpurush to condemn Kal. There is no question that he loves him and loves him very, very dearly. And why not? Because after all, he is part of his own essence. If he could not exist separately without messing things up, we get into some very difficult theologies. Satpurush must have, you see, taken in some way, must take ultimate responsibility for the deeds of Kal. Even no matter how terrible and evil he may appear under some circumstances. Still the fact is that his father always loved him. Don't think there's anything later in the poem contradicts this, that he still loves him. And there is no question that at the end of the cycle, Kal also will be saved. There is no doubt of that. Kabir said to Dharam Das, hearing the words of Satpurush, Kurma was pleased. He was the form of nectar and remained forever in happiness. Again Narinjan remembered Satpurush, and again for many yugas he did the devotion. But he did devotion for his self-desire, and after making the creation he repented it. This is apparently a midway point where he has done something which might be called creating, but he still does not know how to fulfill it, how to carry it through. Dharam Rai thought, how do I develop these worlds? Without the seed, what do I do with the heavenly world, the mortal world, and the world below? Seed, of course, later on is referred to as the root seed, is the essence of life itself, the secret of life, which Kal does not have, and he never has. That is, he is given it, custody of it, but he cannot produce it. It is not made by him, it does not come from him. And the heavenly world, the mortal world, and the world below is another way of describing the three worlds. And when that is, have our usual preconceptions and we are reading this or hear it, if we live in a preliterate society, then it sounds like he's talking about heaven, earth, and hell. But from the point of view of Kal, who is speaking from the level of Mansarovar, or from the point of view of anyone in a higher level such as Sach Khand, the heavenly world is obviously the causal plane, the mortal world is the astral plane, and the world below, that is to say the pit, is our universe. And that appears to be, without a doubt, what is meant. With what do I think? How do I make the body? So again doing devotion, I will ask for that which can put life into my three worlds. He determined to get life for the worlds. Things are to some extent created, but there is no life in them, and began remembering Satpurush. He did devotion for 64 yugas, standing on one foot. Satpurush again sends Saj to Narinjan. Him. Satpurush, the abode of grace, was pleased with his seva. Again he is pleased with him, even after what has happened to Kurma. He told Saj, what new thing does he ask for now? Saj, go to Narinjan and give him whatever he wants. Tell him to create the universe, leaving all deceptions. When Satpurush ordered, Saj went to Kal, bowing his head to him. He arrived where Kal was standing, doing his devotion. Looking at Saj, Dharam Rai became happy and was convinced that Satpurush was pleased with him. Saj said, listen, O Dharam Rai, now why are you doing devotion? Bowing his head, Dharam Rai said, give me some place where I can dwell. Then Saj said, listen, Dharam Rai, Satpurush has given you everything. Whatever comes out from Kurma's stomach, Satpurush has ordered to give to you. You have been given the kingdom of the three worlds. Now, without any fear, create the universe. Then Narinjan said, how do I create the universe? Please tell Satpurush, folding your hands, this. I am your servant and not a strange one. Tell Satpurush, I beg him to give me the seed for the field of my creation. I am his servant and do not rely on anyone else. Daily I remember him. Go and tell this to Satpurush. Please give me the seed, the sign of immortality. Kabir said to Dharam Das, again Saj returned to Satpurush and told him Narinjan's request. Then, as Satpurush ordered, Saj returned home to Satlok, which is full of happiness. The gracious Satpurush doesn't look at good or bad deeds. He is controlled by service. And the word service, which can also mean a form of devotion, it is the word seva. As I said several weeks back, this is, of course, the principle of grace, and without it, we would all be in tough shape. So, if he applies it to Kal, also, we should not complain. The nature of the highest God is grace. That means that those who sin are forgiven, no matter who they are. The creation of Adya. Then Satpurush, in his will, created a female who had eight parts in her body. She had eight hands and came and stood on the left side of Satpurush. Bowing her head, she asked him, O Satpurush, what are your orders for me? Satpurush gives the root seed to Adya. Then Satpurush said this, daughter, go to Dharam Rai. Take hold of that which I give you, and meeting with Dharam Rai, create the universe. Kabir said to Dharam Das, then Satpurush gave her the seed of the jiva, whose name is Soham. There is no difference between jiva and Soham. Jiva is the essence of Satpurush. Satpurush created three powers, fearlessness, consciousness of himself, and Ogani. Now this is the first time in the poem that there is any mention of a female. That is in the story of creation. It is, I think, very significant that when it comes to infusing life into the lower worlds, that is from the causal plane downward, it requires the division into male and female. Up to this point, although the characters have all been described as he, they are in reality both male and female. They are not separated into their male and female parts. A possible exception may be Kal, and that may be one of the problems with Kal, is that he has either closed off the female part of him, or for some reason when he was separated out, he was only the male part. Obviously, he cannot create the lower universe by himself. The root seed is given to him, and it is given to him by a being who is differentiated in such a way that she can be called female. Now, the seed of the jiva, the root seed, what is called, jiva means life, it's one meaning. It also means, and is often used as a synonym for soul, individualized soul, as distinguished from Atman, which is soul. Soul is considered as the child of God. And the seed of the jiva, his name is Soham. Soham means, of course, I am what you are. And so when it says there is no difference between jiva and Soham, Jiva is the essence of Satpurush. This is a very concise expression of the unity of all life. Life is, I am what you are. Life is the essence of Satpurush. So Satpurush has somehow handed over through the agency of Adya, who also has many names, Ashtangi is another one of her names, the essence of himself in some form to convey to Kal, with which between the two of them the lower universe is to be brought into creation. Notice that this is still within his will. In other words, the division of male and female, the union of the two in order to produce conscious beings, and the conveying of essence of himself to infuse life into the lower creation is all done with the will and blessing of the Supreme Father. So far. Him. When Satpurush was pleased, he gave Ashtangi to Dharamrai. She was told to go to Mansarovar and join with him. The woman Ashtangi was very beautiful and charming. She was ordered to go to Mansarovar and create the dense creation. Couplet. She was given the root seed of 84 lakhs of births. She went to create the living universe after bowing her head to Satpurush. All this was given to the first woman who went to Mansarovar. Satpurush called Sahaj immediately, and he came running. Satpurush said, Sahaj, go to Dharamrai and tell him, you have been given that thing which you desired. The root seed has been sent to you. Now you can create the universe as you like. Go and live in Mansarovar so that the universe can be created. Again Sahaj went to where Narinjan was standing in his devotion. When he told him the words of Satpurush, Narinjan obeyed him. In Mansarovar, the swallowing of Adya by Narinjan after being attracted to her, the curse of Satpurush, and in this section is where things go irrevocably wrong. I mean, they're at least, if potentially they have been wrong ever since Kal attacked Kurma, this is where they go wrong, and where Satpurush's will is not any longer the guiding force. Hearing the word of Satpurush, Narinjan came and settled in Mansarovar. When he first saw the woman, Dharamrai was pleased. Looking at Ashtangi, Dharamrai behaved in a self-conceited manner. He said, there is no limit to the limitless Lord. Delighted by the beauty of that woman, he looked at her. Looking at every single part of her body, he became impatient. Of course, he is time. And he swallowed the woman. Now, in every other instance, when it's speaking of Kal swallowing someone, it means that he kills them. In other words, the devouring or swallowing of the jivas by Kal is a way of referring to death. Kal is the death god. His name is Yamraj, or Yama, means the king of death or death itself. It usually means that. Now, Ashtangi does not die in the way that the jivas will later. She is not that particular kind of entity. She is, after all, a direct daughter of Satpurush, just as Kal is a son. O Dharamdas, hear about Kal's nature. When that unjust Kal swallowed the woman, she was astonished. At once she cried for help, saying, Kal has made me his food. And again, every other place in the poem that is a reference to death. The jivas are the food of Kal, means that Kal derives strength from causing death. Then Dharamrai came to Sahaj, who took back the plane of void consciousness from him. Then Satpurush remembered what had happened to Kurma, how Kal had also attacked him to control him, and had destroyed his three heads. Satpurush is gracious, but he knows all. Knowing this character of Kal, Satpurush cursed him, about which I will tell you now. Satpurush's curse on Narinjan. If you will devour 1 lakh jivas daily, 1 1/4 lakhs will be developed. And this is a very interesting line. It's very interesting that it's a curse. It's very interesting in its implications. But it means, and I've discussed this line with Sanchi quite a bit, because it's one of the most important lines in the poem. And what it means is that there is no way in the lower worlds that death is totally illusory. And not only is it illusory, it is self-defeating. In other words, the more that Kal devours the souls, that is life,
the more life is created. He can kill and kill and kill, but the only ultimate result will be that there will be more life than when he started. And exactly how that works, the mechanics of it, is not perhaps possible to complain, but Sanchi said it is something like a farmer sowing seeds, which, as we know, Christ used that image. First, the corn grain has to die as such, then it is sown, and then it produces infinitely more than when it was, you know, than what it was before. He said it's something like that. It's like a farmer sowing his field with seeds which have supposedly died from before, and much more grows up. So that for every 100,000 jivas, or souls, that Kal eats, there are 125,000 come forth. And this has all kinds of implications as to of how the souls are individual, which is impossible. I cannot fully understand it. I don't think that it can be explainable. But we know that ultimately all souls are one, so that on some level, Kal is eating life. The life that he is eating is not differentiated, and then comes forth as even more life. So that is the first thing. The reason it's a curse is because it frustrates his what he sees as his aim, and it ensures that ultimately he will be doing the will of Satpurush, whether he wants to or not. Him. Then Satpurush thought, how can I finish Kal? He is very dangerous and will make the souls restless. I cannot destroy him or stop him. He is my worthless son. If I withdraw him into myself, I will have to bring everything back. Now, again, these are tremendously important lines. I cannot destroy him or stop him. He is my worthless son. I think the operable words there are, he is my son. He is worthless. But he's my son, so I cannot destroy him or stop him, because he's part of me. If I withdraw him into myself, I will have to bring everything back. In other words, the only way to prevent Kal from being Kal is to, again, pull him back into the Supreme Father. But if he does that, he cannot do that. He cannot bring one aspect of the created universe in without bringing it all back. And that is not his wish at this time. So, it exists. Couplet. This is my immovable word. I will remove Kal from here, that is to say, from the upper universe, from Dasvandwar upwards. He will never be allowed to enter my region. I will keep my word. Satpurush sends Jogjit with orders to expel Kal from Mansarovar. Satpurush called Jogjit and made him understand the character of Dharamrai. Jogjit, go quickly and expel Kal after beating him. Now he cannot live in Mansarovar, and in this plane of Satlok he must never come. In the stomach of Dharamrai is that woman. Tell her to remember my Shabda, and to go and live in heaven, in the mortal world, and the world below, whose king is Kal. She should come out of the stomach of Dharamrai, and she will get good fruit for this good deed. Go and tell Dharamrai that now that woman is his. Kabir said to Dharamdas, bowing his head to Satpurush, Jogjit went to Mansarovar. When Kal saw him, he became very dreadful. Kal asked him, why did you come here? Who has sent you here today? Jogjit said, O Dharamrai, you have eaten that woman, and Satpurush has ordered me to expel you from here. Jogjit asked the woman, why are you in his stomach? Tear it and come out, and remember the glory of Satpurush. Apparently, however, she does not come out before what happens next. Kabir said to Dharamdas, hearing this, Dharamrai burned with anger within himself, and coming before Jogjit, he clashed with him. Then Jogjit remembered Satpurush and received his light and power. Satpurush ordered him to hit the center of Kal's forehead with full force. Jogjit did as he was ordered. Him. When Jogjit hit him, Dharamrai fell down far from Satlok. He was afraid of Satpurush and got up by himself. The woman came out from his stomach, which means that she fell with him, although she perhaps would not have desired to do that had she not been inside him, and seeing him again became afraid. She was in doubt and afraid of Kal. She stood, thinking, looking at the ground here and there. Dharamrai said, listen, woman. Give up your fear of me. Satpurush created you for me. Now let us create the universe together. I am your man and you are my woman. Give up your fear. The woman said, "Why do you talk like this? You are my elder brother." The woman said, "Listen, father, why do you talk like this, knowing our relation? I am your daughter now since you put me in your stomach. Previously you were my elder brother, now you are my father. Look at me with pure eyes or you will be committing a sin. If you look at me with desire, you will become a sinner." That Indian said, "Listen, Bhavani," which is another name for this woman. "Listen, Bhavani, I will tell you the truth. I am not afraid of sins and virtues, because I myself am their creator. All sins and virtues are born from me, and from me no one will ask the account. I will spread sins and virtues, and anyone who becomes entangled in them is ours. That is why I am telling you to understand and accept my words. Satpurush has given you to me, Bhavani. Obey my word." This also is a tremendously important sequence. Of course, Kal is telling the truth when he says that the woman was created for him and they were supposed to create the universe together. What Satpurush had in mind for them to do is not explained fully, but it is far different than what Kal eventually does do. And his point, "I am not afraid of sins and virtues because I myself am their creator. All the sins and virtues are born from me, and from me no one will ask the account." This is also true in Kal, in his aspect as Dharamrai, or the Lord of Law, or the Lord of Judgment, is the one from whom what we call sins and virtues on this planet come. And this is the other aspect of Kal, the law of justice, from which karma proceeds. He is the one who decides what is considered good and bad according to the law of karma. And this is why Master Kripal Singh was very careful to always explain that from the point of view of the three worlds, Kal is just. And he is not evil from that point of view. He is evil only when we try to go beyond that. And whenever he does or is responsible for things that prevent us from going beyond that. Blake has written very fully on this. His picture of your reason, again, I will mention, is exactly Kal as described here by Kabir. But also point out that in the beginning of Paradise Lost, the description of by Milton of the fall of Satan has a lot of parallels to this poem, written, by the way, probably close to the same time. Of course, worlds apart. Kabir said to Dharam Das, "Hearing this, the woman laughed. They agreed with each other, and both of them were delighted. She was, after all, created to create with Kal. And now she has fallen too, even though she was not primarily responsible. Wherever they are, and where they are, cannot probably really be described, except in the words of the Bible, which begins at about this point. In the beginning, the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep." This is about where they're at. "She spoke attractive words in a sweet voice. She thought of having sexual relations with Dharamrai. Hearing her sweet words, Dharamrai was pleased, and he decided to perform the sexual act with her." This now is the prototypical pre-human cosmic act of intercourse. Never before has this happened in the universe, and it sets the pattern for what happens next, for what happens afterwards in all the lower creation. Him. "The woman said, 'I don't have a genital organ.' Obviously, however male and female were meant to relate to each other in creation, it was not the way that the fallen couple was now perceiving. Then Narinjan acted this way. With his nail, he immediately cut the whole of her genital organ, and in that way, the door of creation was formed. We may assume that the door of creation was meant to be formed from the beginning, but not in the violent, impatient way in which Kal has marred it, so that there is a marring from the very beginning of the relationship of male and female in the lower planes is marred by this violent impatience of Kal. The blood started pouring from the genital organ as it was harmed by the nail, not just created but also harmed, and since then the act of sexual intercourse has existed. O Dharam Das, listen to the story of creation which no man knows. Kal indulged for 3 times, and Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh were born. Brahma is the oldest, Vishnu the second born, and Shambhu the youngest." Couplet. when Kal and the woman enjoyed together, the creation was begun. In other words, the whole creation from the causal plane downwards has been conceived and created in violence. Violence, impatience, and impatience is another aspect of time as compared with eternity, and of unwillingness to wait for the will of the Father to fulfill itself in the fullness of time. And that is the basic teaching of this section of Anurag Sagar. And it is my opinion, having read the whole poem through many times now, that this particular section, which we have just read, is probably the most important in terms of explaining things of anything in the poem. That is the end of this subsection. The next one is the creation of the lower worlds, which explains how Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva managed to bring into being the worlds even below the causal plane, and what happened to Kal, and how life as we know it gradually began to appear. Still, so far, we have still not reached anything roughly comparable to physical life. We are still talking on at least causal or astral levels. Continuing our study of Kabir's great epic poem, the Anurag Sagar, or the Ocean of Love, which is in the form of a conversation between Kabir and his disciple Dharamdas, and covers the nature of existence from beginning to end, or at least from beginning to well on into the future. Last week we studied the section on the fall of Kal, which is perhaps the most important of all sections. Among other things, includes the original separating of the male from the female on the part of Satpurush, or God the Father, the ruining of that by Kal, that is to say, the changing of it from whatever Satpurush had intended to a violent and impatient act. We saw that Kal was not able to create anything of himself, but only after he was given the root seed, that is, the seed of life, by Satpurush, which was given to him by the first female, Ashtangi. And that Satpurush's curse on Kal was that if you devour 1 lakh juvas daily, 1 1/4 lakhs will be developed. In other words, no matter how hard the death god works, no matter how much death is prevalent, life is still going to triumph. The more people killed than by nature, the more will be living. Very, very remarkable concept, similar, as Sanchi explained, to the sowing of seed and having it produce much more than was sown. Also, Kal's manifestation as the Lord of Law, which was more or less the ending, in which he says very plainly, I am not afraid of sins and virtues, because I myself am their creator. All the sins and virtues are born from me, and from no one will ask the account. I will spread sins and virtues, and anyone who becomes entangled in them is ours. This is a tremendously important statement, which perhaps was not explained fully enough last week. One of the characteristic sayings of the masters, Master Sawan Singh in particular, used to be, where there is love, there is no law. And we know from the study of the writings of all masters, from Buddha and Jesus onwards, that the essence of the incarnations of Satpurush, as opposed to the incarnations of Kal, that is to say, the true masters, is the forgiveness of sins. In other words, the masters come to forgive transgressions, not to create opportunities for more transgression. The moral law as such, as the poet Blake and many others have very clearly pointed out, is from the negative power. And that is why Kal is called Dharamrai, which means Lord of Law or Lord of Judgment, so often in the course of this poem. This does not mean, of course, that we can then, as initiates or as people who understand this particular principle, go out and do anything we want. The masters are very clear that the fact that love cancels out the law puts in its place a higher responsibility, which comes not from being afraid of transcending the God of Judgment, but because we love him, we keep his commandments. And of course, the commandments of the masters, the incarnations of Satpurush, are given not in order to institute a harsh code that is more difficult to keep, perhaps, than not to keep,
but rather because the commandments that they give are those which are needed in order to take our souls to such kind, which is their whole point. What they give us is what we need in order to grow, and it is only for that purpose. Even so, they forgive us, even when we break their own commandments, as opposed to the general so-called moral law of the negative power. Even when we break the things that the masters specially lay stress on, it is true that they do forgive us. That does not mean that we have done a good thing, either in regard to our own growth or in regard to the well-being of the master, because the master has explained many times in many of his bodies that if the disciple transgresses one of the genuine commandments coming from Sach Khand, one of the words of the master, then someone has to pay. Either the master has to pay or the disciple has to pay. And because the master forgives us and we are weak, usually he pays. So that is a necessary corollary. But it is true that sins and virtues, as we customarily think of them, right and wrong, are definitely dualistic, come from the causal plane downwards, and are imposed on us by the negative power. And remember that Master Kripal Singh stated, I think a few weeks ago, he quoted this also, the masters give a very simple definition of sin as forgetting of origin. Sin is forgetting of origin. When we forget what we really are, that is to say that we are a child of the Father, of God the Father or Satpurush, then we are putting ourselves into a state of sin, and we become subject to the laws of the negative power by that act of forgetting. So, the last thing that happened in the section that we read last week was Kyle's forcing of sexuality onto the woman Ashtangi. Many of these people, who are not exactly people either, but are superhuman beings of tremendous power, we are still somewhere on the level of the causal plane. But many of these characters have many names. For the most part, unless it was too confusing, left them exactly as Kabir wrote them, because most of those names do have significance. They illustrate different aspects of the same person. Ashtangi is also called Adya and Bhavani. Ashtangi refers to the fact that she was created with 8 main parts, according to the early part of the poem. Adya means that she was the primal female. Okay, and of course she fell when Kal did, involuntarily, because Kal had swallowed her. The creation of the lower worlds. And the last thing, Kal indulged 3 times, and Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh were born. Brahma is the oldest, Vishnu the second born, and Shambhu the youngest. Mahesh and Shambhu are alternative names of Shiva. Dharam Das, understand what happened afterwards. Fire, air, water, earth, and sky. All these came out from Kurama's stomach. The 5 elements were taken from his stomach, and the 3 qualities came out of his head. In this way, the 3 gunas were manifested, and Dharam Rai created the universe. Remember that in the section we read last week, one of the first aspects of Kal's fall was when he was sent to Kurama, who was the first manifested son of Satpurush, and therefore Kal's older brother, in the terms of the poem. He was sent to him to get these things, and instead of asking for them sweetly and gently, as he was instructed to do, he became impatient and tore them from him, some from his stomach and some from his head. He took them, of course, in a latent form. It was said in that earlier section that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, that is the essence of them, came from Kurama. So we can understand this as that when Satpurush, his first manifestation as a separate part, into an aspect of himself separate from the others, was as Kurama. And in this, that is after the creation of the purely spiritual plane of Sach Khand and the higher planes. And that within Kurama he kept that which was required for the creation of the rest of the universe, more or less in latent or stored form, you might say. 5 elements, of course, represent the solid, liquid, and gaseous states of matter. Fire represents the changing that takes place when matter is converted to energy on any level. And sky is Akash,
or the astral element which interpenetrates and is found always mixed up with the matter of the physical universe. Those are given to each of the three sons of Kal, that is, the three gods of the Hindu Trinity, in equal form. Kabir said to Dharamdas, he mixed the elements and the gunas and gave them to the goddess, and then he created his own essence. He dropped three drops in the genital organ of the woman, and three parts were created. Five elements and three gunas were mixed. In this way, the world was created. From the first drop, Brahma was born, who was given the Raja Guna and the five elements. Brahma, of course, is the one who does most of the active creation of the lower universe from this point on, and the Raja Guna is the quality of activity, of action or creativity. From the second drop, Vishnu was born and was given the Sataguna and the five elements. Sataguna is the quality of peace, of perfect harmony and poise, and Vishnu, of course, was in charge of maintaining and sustaining. From the third drop, Mahesh, or Shiva, was born and was blessed with Tamaguna and the five elements. The Tamaguna is the quality of inertia, or nothingness, destruction, we may say, and Shiva, of course, is the destroyer. Five elements and three gunas were mixed, and thus their bodies were made. That is why, again and again, the world is destroyed, and no one knows the secret of its beginning. Then Dharam Rai said, listen, O woman, obey me. You have the seed of Jiva, that is, the seed of life. Using it, create the universe. Again Narinjan said, listen, my queen, do as I say. I have given you three sons. Now I am going to take my attention to the service of Satpurush. Taking these three children, rule over the world, and don't tell the secret of my existence to anyone. None of my three sons will have my darshan. If one searches for me, he will waste his life. Spread such beliefs in the world that no soul will be able to get the knowledge of Satpurush. When my three sons get older, send them to churn the ocean. Kabir said to Dharamdas, explaining these things to the goddess, Narinjan became invisible. He resided in the cave of void consciousness. Who can know this secret? He has become invisible. Now understand your mind as Narinjan. When one defeats the mind and gets the knowledge of Satpurush, Satpurush himself manifests within such a person. Couplet. All the jivas have become foolish and think that Kal is the inconceivable one. Involved in the tides of karma, they are suffering pain birth after birth. Kal troubles the jivas, involving them in many karmas. He himself plays the tricks, but gives the consequences to the jiva. This again is a very important section because it explains something that otherwise seems contradictory, although anyone who studies this poem even a little bit sees, as I mentioned a long time ago, the fact that basically it is a hymn to paradox, and that the structure of the universe is indeed basically paradoxical. Narinjan, or Kal, does not anymore exist as a person, at least as far as we are concerned, in the way that he has been explained up until now. And this is why the masters sometimes refer to him in a very personal way, as he is in this poem. Also, they will sometimes say that he is not a person. In The Light of Kripal, there is one place where Master Kripal Singh, on one page, refers to him in both ways. He is asked the question, does Kal exist as a person, or is he an impersonal force? And he states very flatly that he is an impersonal force. And then, just a few sentences further on, he says that whenever anyone goes past him, leaves the causal plane, and goes on up to Sachkhand, Kal shouts, oh, my lord, a man is gone, or something like that. It's a very personal reference, not explicable if Kal is only an impersonal force. The thing is that he's both. And from our points of view, until such time as we reach the point where we can go beyond him, he exists only as mind. And this is his primary existence in the present. Now, later on in this poem, Kabir meets Kal many times, but that's because he is coming from above. The reference here to Narinjan being invisible and existing in our mind
is from the point of view of those below. The same explains why Master Kripal used both kinds of references to Kal. The main trick that Kal has played, of course, and the main point, if there is one main point more than others, of the Anurag Sagar, is the confusion of himself with God in the minds of ordinary people. And this is a confusion that is probably quite universal. As it says, all the jivas have become foolish and think that Kal is the inconceivable one. Involved in the tides of karma, they are suffering pain birth after birth. This is the great triumph, you might say, although from the point of view of the entire life of the universe and from the point of view of God the Father, it is a temporary triumph. Nonetheless, it is a great triumph on his part that he has worshipped as God. And Christ, you know, often referred to Satan as the God of this world, or the prince of this world. He is the one that is worshipped by most people. It is not correct to say either that people are doing that knowing that they are doing that. Obviously, very few people worship Satan or Kal thinking that he is Satan. They worship him because they think sincerely and really that he is God. And also, it is incorrect to say that such a thing is totally outside of the will of the Father. Rather, it is a perversion of the will of the Father, not entirely outside his will. There is some confusion in Kal's mind also on this point. Kal himself, as is true of any one of us who may transcend limits of goodness, does not think of himself as evil. For some reason or other, he still thinks, now I am going to take my attention to the service of Satpurush. Somehow or other, he is fully convinced that what he is doing is absolutely in the will of the Father. Even though three lines down, he says, spread such beliefs in the world that no soul will be able to get the knowledge of Satpurush, even though his main interest in connection with, say, seeking and finding souls is to prevent them from understanding who the true God is and that it is not him, still he thinks he is doing the service of the Father. Master Kripal has said many things which make it impossible to make a superficial answer on this behalf or to say that he is not in every aspect. We may say that the poem itself makes it very clear, as I said, that a great perversion of the Father's will came into being. But these people are not, strictly speaking, evil. They are enormous, and they have at the moment rebelled. They are in rebellion. They are not either intrinsically or even perhaps fully at the present time evil. The churning of the ocean, the creation of 14 jewels. This business of churning the ocean also is a great puzzle to me. I could not get out of my head the image of the Atlantic or the Pacific being churned by what? By something. And finding of the jewels in it, until I finally realized, after many times through, that the ocean is the ocean of this world, and of course that is the Bhav Sagar, what is contrasted throughout the poem to the Anurag Sagar, or the ocean of love, which is the original creation of the Satpurush, which at this point does not exist. In other words, it is the astral and physical planes in their non-existent or latent state, which is what is the ocean. Even after the lower planes come into existence, still, they are called the Bhav Sagar, or the ocean of this world. But at this point, it is in some respects a literal ocean from the point of view of the plane above it, what is referred to as the deep in the first chapter of Genesis, perhaps. When the three boys, Mrs. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, became wise, their mother told them to go churn the ocean. But they were playing games and didn't want to go. There is throughout this section here a very, in many ways, very sweet and sometimes extremely beautiful prototypical evocation of human life, or what human life could be, which is, it's hard to understand all these people simply as evil, as cut and dried evil figures for this reason. Dharamdas, listen and understand what happened there. In the meantime, it so happened, Narinjan practiced yoga and started blowing much wind. The word for wind and spirit in many languages are the same. In Hebrew, they are the same. And I think that in Sanskrit also, they are at least very close. So what is meant is not exactly a physical wind, of course, but motion within the causal plane. the stuff of it. When he exhaled, out came the Vedas. The Vedas came out with his breathing, but few know the secret. Whereas the Vedas are the crystallized teachings of, you might say, the whole idea of religion as an expression of law or judgment. Okay, the Vedas are basically concerned with appeasing the lower gods. They are scriptures of a sacrificial cult, which is concerned with getting what one wants and not making this god or that god angry with us. And that is the basic subject matter of the Vedas. It is a great mistake to assume that the Vedas proper are spiritual documents. They are not. Later on, under the influence of masters, an appendix to the Vedas called the Upanishads was added, which are indeed spiritual documents. Those were added much later and are of a higher order. And Kabir is saying very plainly that the Vedas as such come from Kal. And this is one thing that the masters have been very consistent on from the beginning, from the time of Buddha, we may say, onward, that the Vedas are not important and are not authoritative to those who come from the regions beyond Kal. Here the Vedas also have a life of their own, but they can be understood as the latent form of that which later became crystallized in teachings which eventually became books. Then the Vedas prayed and asked, "What are the oracles for us, O Narinjan?" They were told, "Go and live in the ocean. Remain with him who will find you." This sound occurred, but the form was not seen. Only a deep light was seen. Then the Vedas shone by their own light as the world shines with the light of the sun. The Vedas came to where Dharamrai had created the ocean. When they went into the depths of it, Dharamrai thought of this. He spoke to the goddess, that is, his wife, Ashtangi, through invisible dhyan, and asked her, that is, directly, mind to mind, through meditation, in other words, and asked her why she was stopping the children from churning the ocean. He told her, "Quickly send the three children to churn the ocean. Obey my orders with determination." Then he himself went into the ocean while the goddess thought about churning it. She told the three boys what she wanted, and blessing them, she sent them. "Go to the ocean quickly, my sons. There you will find the treasures." Brahma obeyed her words and started towards the ocean. The other two followed him. Three children went playing, like beautiful children of the swan. Catching each other and chasing each other, they walked extraordinarily. Sometimes they walked, sometimes they ran, sometimes they stood waving their hands. Not even the Vedas sing of the beauty of that time. It's one of my favorite hymns in the whole poem. And of course it is the children of Kal that are being spoken about, which is why I say that we cannot take a simplistic or superficial attitude even toward such a thing as the nature of Kal. The three of them went and stood near the ocean. Each of them was wondering how to churn it. First churning of the ocean. When each of them churned the ocean, they got three things. Brahma got the Vedas, Vishnu fire, and Mahesh poison. Taking all three, they started happily home to their mother. They came to her and showed her their things. She told them to keep them to themselves. This churning of the ocean refers to a continuing process of manifestation. In other words, it's when milk is churned, for example, the end product is butter. The butter is latent in the milk, but only by churning do you get butter. And the butter represents a thickening and a solidifying of the stuff that the milk was, that the butter came from. In the same way, these things are there within the ocean of latent existence. And these three sons of Kal, who are going to be responsible for the creation and maintenance of the lower worlds, are in the process now of separating, of bringing into manifestation that which up till now has been only latent. Second churning of the ocean. Again go and churn the ocean. Whatever you get, keep it with you. Saying this, Adi Bhavani played a trick and created three women. Each of them had her essence in her. Each of them came before their mother, who distributed them among her sons. The three sons had gone to churn the ocean and didn't know about the women. But when they churned this time, they found the three women, which made them very pleased. Taking the women with them, they came and bowed down to their mother. The mother said, "Listen, my children, These are for your work. Each was given a woman in order to enjoy with her. Brahma, you take Savitri. Vishnu, you take Lakshmi. Parvati was given to Shankar, or Shiva. He has more names than anybody. So many names that you never keep up with them. These were the orders of their mother. Accepting whatever Adya gave them, they bowed down to her. Receiving the women made them as happy as the Chakor, or the moon bird, when it sees the moon at night. All three brothers indulged in lust, and thus the gods and demons were born. Dharamdas, understand this. The one who was once a girl became the mother. Again the mother told them, all you brothers, go and churn the ocean again. Whatever you get, keep it with you and don't delay. The third churning of the ocean. Bowing their heads, the three sons went. We will do whatever you say. They churned the ocean without any delay and distributed what they got among themselves. The mine of 14 jewels came out, which they brought to their mother. All three brothers were happy. Vishnu took the nectar and Mahesh took the poison. Symbolic of sustaining and destroying, respectively. This story of the 14 jewels being churned out of the ocean is an ancient story. It is part of a very ancient layer of Hindu mythology, which Kabir has used here. And it does represent the gradual bringing into creation of the lower worlds. The 14 jewels and the other things that are mentioned are the specific implements with which those lower worlds were brought into being. Continuing in our reading of the Anurag Saga, the ocean of love of Kabir, the 14 jewels come out of the ocean, which has been churned three times. That's where we left off. It's the third churning of the ocean. And of course, this ocean is the latent form of the lower universe. That is to say, the physical plane and perhaps the astral too. I'm not certain exactly where they are at this point. The next section, Adya. Adya, of course, is one of the names of the primal female, also known as, what is her name? So many of them. Ashtangi, yeah. Also known as Ashtangi. And something else too. But anyway, she orders her three sons to create the universe, the four kinds of created beings. Now this section, which seems to imply that it happens before what comes after it, by virtue of its placement, is not separate from a creation which is identical, which is described at the end of this section. And I thought on first reading that it referred to two creations, either to one on a higher level and one on a lower, or to one at one end of a cycle of dissolution and grand dissolution and the other at the other end. But Sanchi said, no, this is one creation, and this first section is like a preview. It explains that it happened, and then it gives the events leading up to it, culminating with the creation again. So the four of them, the mother and the three sons, create the lower universe, using, of course, the root seed which has been given to Adya by Satpurush. Kal, at this point, you will remember, has withdrawn from manifested existence, is now invisible and resides only within the mind. So then their mother said this, all three of you create the universe. She created the egg-born, Brahma created the womb-born, Vishnu created the moisture-born, and Shiva developed the seed-born. Those are the four kinds of life, according to the Hindu scriptures, which are, as it explains in a second, divided by the various number of elements which each has. And the womb-born, of course, includes the humans, which are distinguished further by having one more element than any other kind of life. Later on in this poem, a great deal of description is given of these four kinds of life and how they relate to the human life. At this point, it's just mentioned. 84 lakhs of species were created. 1 lakh equals 100,000. So 84 lakhs is 8,400,000. That is the traditional figure for the number of kinds of life. That is the number of species of life that there are. The number of types of incarnations that a soul can have. And it's referred to, of course, throughout Indian thought as the Wheel of 84. It includes, in addition to physical beings, it also includes, there are a number of lacks of beings of purely spiritual types that live in the lower astral planes and so forth. 84 lakhs of species were created, and the earth was made half water, half land. In the seed-born is one element, the moisture-born has two, the egg-born has three elements, and the womb-born four. In the human being are five elements, and the three gunas beautify them. Brahma comes to know about the formless by reading the Vedas. And remember, the Vedas, which are the original Hindu scriptures, came forth during one of these churnings of the ocean, and they are produced by Kal. Then Brahma read the Vedas, and reading them he felt love. The Vedas say, there is but one Satpurush, he is Nirankar, and doesn't have any form. He is seen in the form of light in the plane of void consciousness, and he cannot be seen with the physical body. His head is in the heaven, and his feet lie in the world below. Of course, this description of Satpurush in reality refers to Kal, but that is explained fully only later. Finding this out, Brahma got intoxicated. He told Vishnu, the Vedas have told me about the original person, the Adi Purush. Then he told Shiva that the gist of the Vedas is that there is one Satpurush. Couplet. The Vedas say there is one Satpurush, but we don't know his secret. Kabir said to Dharamdas, then Brahma came to his mother. Saluting her, he touched her feet. O mother, the Vedas have told me that there is another creator, him. Brahma said, listen, my mother, tell me, who is your husband? Shower grace on me and don't hide this from me. Where is our father? Now, Brahma, of course, has jumped to the conclusion that the creator is his mother's husband or his father. And this is precisely the conclusion that he is supposed to jump to. His mother said, listen, Brahma, you don't have any father. Remember that Kal has told her not to tell of his existence to his sons. Everything is created from me. I have nourished the whole creation. Brahma said, mother, listen carefully. The Vedas have reached the conclusion that there is one Purush who is in hidden form. Adya said, listen, my son Brahma, there is no other creator but me. I have created the three worlds, and I alone have created the seven oceans. Brahma said to Adya, I believe you that you have done all this, but why did you hide this before? The Vedas say that there is one Alakh Narinjan Satpurush. If you are the creator, why didn't you think of this before? You made the Vedas. Why did you mention the Alakh Narinjan in them as the creator? Couplet. If you created everything by yourself then, mother, why didn't you write that in the Vedas? Don't play tricks with me. Tell me the truth. When Brahma showed his stubbornness, Adya considered what to do. Kabir said to Dharamdas, she thought, how do I make him understand? He doesn't believe me. If I tell him about Narinjan, how is he going to accept it? Moreover, Narinjan has told me that no one can have his darshan. If I tell him he is invisible, how do I make him see him? Thinking carefully, she told her son, Alakh Narinjan doesn't give his darshan. Brahma said, tell me his place, and don't worry about pros and cons. I don't believe your words. I don't like this business. First you want to delude me, now you say he doesn't give darshan, so you won't have darshan. Don't say useless things like this. Him, give me his darshan right now. I no longer rely on you. Clear up my doubts. Don't delay for a moment. His mother said, listen, Brahma, I am telling you the truth. His head is in the seventh heaven, and his feet are in the seventh world below. Him, if you desire his darshan, take a flower in your hand and go bow your head to him. Hearing this, Brahma turned towards the earth with his head down. His mother thought, he doesn't obey me. The Vedas have taught him this, but he won't be able to have his darshan. Ashtangi said, listen, my child. Alakh Narinjan is your father. But dear son, you will never have his darshan. I say this with full understanding. Hearing this, Brahma was disturbed. In his mind dwelt the determination to have his father's darshan. Bowing his head to his mother, he decided that only after having the darshan of his father would he return. At once he started moving toward the north, rapidly. Vishnu headed for the world below. He also wanted the darshan of his father. He was going, in other words, to have the darshan of his father's feet. His mother had just said, we're in the world below. But Mahesh didn't let his attention waver. Mahesh, of course, is Shiva, who has more names than anybody. He didn't utter a word. He just kept serving his mother. Shivaji didn't worry. He kept his attention on his mother's service. Many days passed while the mother worried about her children. Vishnu returns from his search and tells how he did not see his feet. First, Vishnu returned to his mother and told her his story. I didn't see my father's feet. With the fire of Sheshnag's poison, my body became black. I became upset over this and came back. I didn't have my father's darshan. Hearing this, Adya was very pleased. Lovingly, she called Vishnu near her and caressed him. She kissed him, and keeping her hand on his head in blessing, she said, my son, you have told me the truth. Dharamdas said to Kabir, my doubt has been cleared. O my lord, tell me now about Brahma. Did he have the darshan of his father's head, or did he also come back disappointed? Him. You have told me the story of the day when Brahma went to see his father. Did he meet his father or not? Did he have his darshan or not? O my Satguru, tell me all this, explaining them one by one to me. Understanding me as your servant, throw light on this matter. Don't hide anything from me. My lord, I am your servant. Please make my birth successful. Tell me what happened afterwards. The story of Brahma's search for his father. Kabir said to Dharamdas, Dharamdas, you are very dear to me. Understand my teachings and with determination keep them in your heart. Brahma didn't take long to get there, as he desired his father's darshan. He got to the place where there is no sun nor moon. It is only the void there. In many ways he prayed and then he contemplated the light. In this way many days passed, but still he didn't have the darshan of his father. He wasted 4 yugas in contemplating the void, but still he did not have his father's darshan. Adya worries about Brahma. Brahma didn't have the darshan of his father. Meditating on the void many yugas passed. His mother worried in her heart, where is my oldest son, Brahma? How can I continue to create? When will he come back? Brahma, of course, is the creator. So that is his job. Vishnu is the preserver and Shiva the destroyer. Although all three of them, in a sense, create together, just as three processes are impossible to sort out, without Brahma, the creation cannot happen. So his mother needs him for that purpose. Actually, all three of them plus Adya. One of Adya's names, I think I mentioned last time, also is Maya. And this is the nature of the lower worlds, which is divided up between these individuals. The creation of Gayatri. Rubbing her body, the mother took out filth and created the form of a daughter. I think filth refers only to the inside of her body. It does not imply anything necessarily about Gayatri, who is no better or worse than anyone else at this point. The essence of Shakti, that is power, and that apparently refers to the root seed that she has got, was mixed with her, and the name Gayatri was given to her. Gayatri is also a very prominent Hindu goddess. Gayatri bowed down to her mother, kissed her feet, and put her head on her feet. Holding both her hands, Gayatri made this request. Listen, mother, to my one question. Why did you create me? Tell me so that I may obey your orders. Adya said, daughter, listen to this. Brahma is your eldest brother. He has gone in the sky to have the darshan of his father. Go and bring him back after making him understand that he will never have the darshan of his father. He will waste his birth in searching for him. Whatever it takes to bring him, go and do it, and bring him back. Gayatri goes in search of Brahma. Kabir said to Dharam Das, "Gayatri started on the way with the words of her mother in her heart. The girl with the tender body walked along, thinking of her mother's words. Him. On reaching there, she saw the wise one, that is Brahma, whose eyes were closed. For a few days she remained there. Then she thought of a plan. How will he get up? Now what to do? Remembering her mother, she thought and thought, and eventually made contact with her. Adya tells Gayatri how to awaken Brahma. When Gayatri contacted Adya, she received this message. Of course, this is within. Brahma will awaken only when you touch him. So Gayatri did as she was told by her mother. After reflection, she touched his lotus feet. The waking of Brahma, his anger at Gayatri. When Brahma awoke and his attention was disturbed, who is this sinner, this guilty one, who has made me leave off my samadhi? I will curse you because you have disturbed me from my father's remembrance. Gayatri said, first know my sin and then curse me. I am telling you the truth. Your mother has sent me to bring you back. Now come on, quickly, don't delay. Without you, who will spread creation? Brahma said, how can I go? I haven't had my father's darshan yet. Gayatri said, you will have his darshan. Of course, there she is not doing what her mother had told her to tell him. But now come quickly with me, or you will repent. Brahma tells Gayatri to bear false witness. Gayatri demands sexual relations with Brahma. Brahma said, if you will bear witness that I have seen the head of my father with my eyes, and will make my mother convinced, I will come with you. Hearing this, Gayatri said, I won't utter false words, but if you fulfill my desire, my brother, only then can I lie. Brahma said, I don't understand. Explain yourself. Be clear. Gayatri said, have sexual intercourse with me, and then I will lie, and you will win. Kabir said to Dharam Das, Gayatri said, of course it is selfish, but I am telling you to do it, considering it as a virtuous, charitable thing. Hearing this, Brahma thought in his heart, what to do now? Him. If I remain indifferent to her, my purpose will not be served. She won't bear witness, and my mother will put me to shame. I don't see my father. None of my purposes will be accomplished by thinking about sins. I must indulge with her sexually. Brahma copulated with her, and the determination to have the darshan of his father vanished from his mind. Both of them were full of ardor, and in place of decent thoughts, bad intellect came. The creation of Purpavati. When Brahma told Gayatri to come to their mother, she said, I have another idea. Let me create one more witness. Brahma said, good. Do anything to make mother believe. Then Gayatri thought, and removing filth from her body, she created a daughter. Mixing her own essence in her, she named her Savitri. When Gayatri told her to say that Brahma had had the darshan of his father, Savitri said, I don't know this. I will lose if I bear false witness. Hearing this, both of them were very worried. They didn't know what to do. Gayatri tried to convince her in many ways, but Savitri didn't accept it. Finally, Savitri uttered these words, if Brahma will copulate with me, I will lie. Gayatri said to Brahma, copulate with her and complete our work. Brahma indulged with Savitri and in this way carried more burden of sin on his head. Savitri has another name too. She is also called Purpavati. Of course, Savitri, Purpavati is another prominent Hindu goddess, worshipped by many, many people in India. All three started for the place where their mother was. Brahma returns to his mother with Gayatri and Savitri, and all of them get cursed. Brahma saluted his mother, and she asked him how he was. Tell me, Brahma, did you have the darshan of your father? And from where did you get this other woman? Brahma said, both of them are my witnesses, that I have seen the head of the Lord with my own eyes. Then the mother asked Gayatri to consider carefully and tell the truth. Did you see him having darshan? Tell me its true effect. Then Gayatri said this. Brahma had the darshan of the head of his father. I have seen that he touched his head. Brahma met the Lord. Him.
Brahma touched the head of his father with flowers in his hands. I was seeing with my own eyes. He offered him flowers, pouring the water. Oh, my mother, this is true. From those flowers came out this Pupavati at that place. He has had the darshan of his father. Ask the girl. Oh, mother, this is true. You can ask Pupavati. I'm telling you the truth. It has no trace of falsehood in it. Mother asked Pupavati, tell me the truth. Tell me what happened when Brahma touched his forehead. Him. Oh, Pupavati, tell me the story of the darshan in detail. I am asking you to tell me, how did Brahma have the darshan of his father? Then Pupavati said, mother, this is the truth. The wise one had the darshan of his father's head, and he definitely offered him flowers. Kabir said to Dharam Das, hearing the witness, Adya became perplexed. She was surprised and didn't understand the secret behind it. Adya's worry. Alak Narinjan told me with determination that no one would ever see him. Then are these three lying, O Alak Narinjan? Explain this to me. Ashtangi remembered Narinjan, who in turn told her, of course from within, Brahma has not had my darshan. He has brought false witnesses. All of them have lied. Do not believe them. This is completely untrue. Adya curses Brahma. Hearing this, the mother became angry and cursed Brahma. No one will worship you because you have not spoken the truth. You spoke untruth. Moreover, you committed bad karma and carry the burden of hell on your head. Your race, and that race here refers to the Brahmin race, of course, which is the highest caste in India and who consider themselves higher than anyone else and who are responsible for orthodox Hinduism and who wrote most of the orthodox Hindu scriptures. Your race will also lie, and their inner selves will be full of sinner filth. They will make many rules and regulations. They will have the devotees of Vishnu and thus will fall in hell. They will tell the story of the Puranas to others, but acting differently, they will suffer pain. I truly tell you about those who, hearing your race, will get their knowledge and do their devotion. They will search for the essence of other gods, and criticizing will go into the mouth of Kao. They will worship the gods in many ways, and for the sake of donations they will cut off heads. Those who become their disciples and follow them will never get any spiritual wealth. They will never reach the path of spirituality, and for their self-interest they will teach others. For self-interest they will make the world hear their knowledge, and will make their own worshipping firm in the world. They will consider themselves higher and others lower. O Brahma, your race will be very blemished. Kabir said to Dharam Das, when the mother attacked Brahma with this curse, he fainted and fell down. Adya curses Gayatri. Gayatri, it is now your turn. You will have five husbands. Your first husband will be Vrishab. Your race will spread very much but will be destroyed. You will be incarnated many times and will eat inedible food as you have lied monstrously. For self-interest you lied. Why did you bear false witness? Gayatri accepted the curse, then Adya looked at Savitri. Adya curses Savitri. O Pupavati, knowingly you lied and have spoiled your birth. Listen, Pupavati, no one will ever believe you nor worship you for his own wishes. You will dwell where there is dirt. Go and suffer hell, as you lied for lust. One who will sow and nourish you, his dynasty will come to an end. Now go and take another incarnation as Kevada Ketaki. I do not know fully all of the ways in which these curses intertwine with Indian mythology as is generally understood, but Gayatri is explained later in the poem. Gayatri is born as Draupadi in the Mahabharata, who of course had five husbands, and who figures a lot in many stories that the masters tell. And this is the fulfillment of her curse. That's one of her incarnations. And Draupadi, of course, has both very positive and very negative aspects. She is responsible, according to Master Kripal, for the whole onset of the Mahabharata war, and yet she also figures very positively, too. The curse of Brahma is modified later by Vishnu, as we will see, but it explains both why Brahma, who is the creator, according to Hinduism, and who, according to the masters, as we have seen, did indeed have a large part in creating the lower worlds, is not worshipped by anybody. There is in all of India today, there is no temple. I think there may be one, somewhere. But there is not more. Seriously. Very few people worship Brahma, although he is the creator god. And Vishnu and Shiva between them are worshipped by all of the Hindus. But this is the, according to Kabir, is the ultimate reason. Of course, the cursing of Brahma is a very subtle point because the Brahmins, especially as modified by Vishnu later on, have a lot of things going for them. I mean, in India, even today, the Brahmins are looked up to. And for a long time, they had the entire weight of law and custom was behind that only the Brahmins could, truly speaking, be spiritual people. And this is something that the masters, very largely by coming in other castes, other than Brahmin, have worked very hard to show is just not true. Kabir, in some of his lyrics, has very powerfully expressed this. O Brahmin, if you are better than other people, why weren't you born in a different way than anyone else? And things like that. The curse is only a curse from the ultimate point of view. From the temporal point of view, the Brahmins, they make the rules and regulations, and they do tell the Puranas to others, and they have thousands of disciples who follow them, and yet it's all worthless, because in doing that, they're carrying the responsibility of misleading all those people, and that is the nature of the curse. Kabir said to Dharam Das, him, all of them were cursed as the result of the foolish evil done by them. The woman as sex object is the greatest trick of the negative power, who has stung everybody. Neither Brahma nor Shiva, not even Shankadi nor Narada, escaped from it. Here, O Dharam Das, only he who is attached to Satnam escapes from it. With the glorious grace of Sat Shabda, this art of Kal can never reach him. One who remains attached to Master's feet in mind, word, and deed, this sin can never come near him. Adya's repentance and fear of Narinjan. Him. She repented in her mind after she had cursed them and thought, what will Narinjan do with me now? I'm not forgivable. Narinjan curses Adya. A sound came from the sky. O Bhavani, what have you done? I sent you to create the universe. Why did you do this? Him. If any higher one harasses a lower one, I am the one who takes care of the reprisal. When the third age comes, you will have five husbands. Excuse me, I made an error when I said that Gayatri would be Draupadi. It is actually Adya herself who is Draupadi. He is giving the same curse on her that she gave to Gayatri. Of course, this is Kal in his justice aspect. If any higher one harasses a lower one, I am the one who takes care of the reprisal. This is a thing, even though just a short while, Kabir refers to Kal as an evil butcher. And even though from some perspectives that's very true, at the same time, within the context of the three worlds, within the context of the law of karma that he has himself created, he does make sure that the balance is maintained. So this is another aspect of it. And that is why he in turn lays on Adya the same curse that she has laid on the others. It was not part of her commission to dispense justice in quite that way. Kabir said to Dharam Das, when Bhavani heard the curse in the form of an exchange, she didn't say but thought, I am cursed as a result of cursing. Now, Narinjan Rai, what will I do? I am in your control. Do whatever you want. Why Vishnu turned black. And this is an explanation of something that was mentioned briefly before. Then Adya asked Vishnu, caressing him, listen, my son, to one word of mine. Tell me truly, when you went to have the darshan of your father's feet, you were white. How did you become black? Vishnu said to Adya, as soon as you permitted me, I started for the world below to have the darshan of my father's feet. In my hands I carried akshat flowers and started walking on the path to the world below. I drew near the Sheshnag. The Sheshnag, remember, who is mentioned in the beginning of the poem, is the primordial serpent king. Not exactly a serpent, but in the form of something that can roughly be described as a serpent. Perhaps the origin of the dragon myths, I would say, who is intelligent, who speaks, who is not entirely evil, but who is not any friend of mankind either, or the gods for that matter, whose poison's power slowed me. The power of that poison dwelt within me and turned me black. At that time I heard one sound, which I will tell you about. It said, Vishnu, go back to your mother and tell her the truth. As in Satyuga and Treta Yuga, when the fourth part of Dvapara Yuga will come, that is the end of the third age, the end of the copper age, then you will be incarnated as Krishna. I tell you, at that time you will be avenged. In the Kalindi River you will stick Sheshnag on a string. There is a famous story that Krishna attacked a thousand-headed serpent in the river Jumna, usually, it says, and defeated him. And Krishna is always, by the way, depicted as black. Now go back without delay. One who harasses lower ones after becoming higher gets avenged by me. I will avenge him who will harass others. Then I came back to you and told the truth to you. Dharamdas humbly asked, O Lord, I am uncertain about this. The woman told him about the contemplating mind. Is that how all the jivas are deluded? The Satguru said, Dharamdas, this is the character of Kaal, and because of it, Vishnu didn't get the knowledge of Satpurush. Look at the trick played by the woman. Hiding the nectar, she cleverly gave the poison to her son. There is no difference between Kaal and that light seen by Vishnu. After understanding the truth, stick to the true religion. This is the character of Kaal. Whatever is within him, he acts accordingly outside. When a man lights the flame, think about its character. Looking at the light, a moth comes near. He understands it as his beloved. But as soon as he touches it, he is reduced to ashes. Unknowingly, he died for nothing. Kaal is like the flame. This cruel Kaal leaves no one. He has devoured crores of incarnations of Vishnu. Brahma and Mahesh are also devoured by him, after he troubles them. There are so many problems he causes the jivas, I could never mention them all. Thinking about them, I am frightened. Daily he devours 1 lakh jivas. So horrible is this butcher Kaal. There Kabir is explaining total, ultimate truth of the matter about all these things. Although notice that the image of the moth and the flame is used many times in a positive way by the masters, including at the beginning of this poem also. The other thing, that the moth is destroyed, flying into the flame, and that if we get involved with Kaal, then that happens. There is nothing to show for it. And of course, we know that that is a term referring to death. And many incarnations, in other words, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, have been incarnated many times and have also been devoured by Kaal, because they are also created by him. Dharamdas said, Listen, my lord, one doubt has come into my mind. Ashtangi was created by Satpurush, and I know how she was created. She was swallowed by Dharamrai, and she came out by the glorious grace of Satpurush. But this same Ashtangi committed fraud. Turning on Satpurush, she made Yama manifest. She didn't tell the secret of Satpurush to her sons. She made them meditate on Kaal Narinjan. Why did Ashtangi do this? Why did she leave Satpurush and befriend Kaal? Of course, Ashtangi's original commission, which is more or less implicit in Kabir's answer, was to cooperate with Kaal and to create the lower universe, which she has done, but discovered the secrets of Satpurush written there. She allowed him to think that that referred to Kaal, and did not in any way indicate to him that there was any other father above and beyond Kaal. So this is really the fraud that Dharamdas is referring to. She allowed her sons to be totally misled, even though she knew, because she had been created by Satguru. The Satguru said, O Dharamdas, listen to the attributes of woman. I will make you understand it all. When there is a girl in the family, she is brought up with many conveniences. Her food, clothing, and bedding are provided, but everyone regards her as an outsider. Lovingly performing the ceremonies, she is made to depart with her husband. When the daughter goes to her husband's home, she is dyed in the colors of her husband. She forgets her mother and father. Dharamdas, this is the quality of woman. That is why Adya also became an alien, and she, the Bhavani, became a part of Kaal. That is why she didn't manifest Satpurush and showed the form of Kal to Vishnu. It is implicit in her nature, and this is reflected also, as the poem clearly makes, in the nature of female human beings too. That is implicit. It is a higher duty to follow the husband than the parents. And this is why Adya has not really done all that much wrong, because she's doing only what she was created to do. She was created and commissioned to work with Kal, of course, before Kal fell. Dharam Das said to Kabir, "O my lord, I now know the secret. Now tell me what happened beyond this." Kabir said to Dharam Das, "The mother destroyed Brahma's pride and again called her dear son Vishnu. O Vishnu, you have this blessing. You will be the favorite among the gods. I will work for fulfilling every desire you will have in your heart." Maya makes Vishnu supreme. Maya, remember, is another name for Adya and Bhavani and Ashtangi. The first son, Brahma, is reproached because falsehood and evil deeds were dear to him. "Now you are supreme among gods, and everyone will worship you," said his mother. Kabir said to Dharam Das, "Thus the mother said those words, full of grace, and made Vishnu the supreme one. Then she went to Mahesh. Looking at her, Mahesh was full of happiness." Adya blesses Mahesh. Again the mother asked, "Tell me, my child, you, Shiva, tell me what is in your heart. Ask for whatever you like. Mother will give you that. My son, I am determined to give you a boon according to your wish." Folding both his hands, Shiva said, "Mother, I'll do as you order. I ask for this boon only, that my body will never be destroyed. Oh, my mother, shower such grace on me that my body may never perish." Ashtangi said, "This can never happen. No one can become immortal. But if you practice yoga and control the breathing, then your body will survive for 4 yugas. As long as the earth and sky exist, your body will never perish." That is, he is giving him the boon of allowing him or enabling him that his body will last as long as the creation does, which is 4 yugas is one cycle, followed by a dissolution. Dharam Das said, "Explain to me the knowledge. I have gotten all the secrets. Now tell me about Brahma. After getting cursed by Adya, what did Brahma do?" Kabir said, "When both Vishnu and Mahesh got the boons, they were happy and excited. In their minds, they were delighted, whereas Brahma was humiliated. Dharam Das, I know everything. I will tell it to you one by one." Being cursed, Brahma desperately goes to Vishnu and tells him of his pain. Vishnu consoles him. Brahma became very sad in his mind and went to Vishnu. Arriving there, he requested Vishnu, saying, "You are my brother and supreme among gods. Mother is gracious on you, whereas because of the curse I am in pain. O brother, I am suffering due to my own deeds. How can I blame mother? O brother, now do something by which my race may continue following mother's words." Vishnu said, "Give up the fear of your mind. I will serve you. You are my elder and I am your younger brother. So remove all doubts and worries. Anyone who is my devotee will serve your family too. Him. I will guarantee this faith in the world, that if you desire the virtues and the fruits of devotion, the yajna and worship done without a Brahman will not be accepted. Those who will worship the Brahman will be doing virtuous deeds, and only they will be dear to me. To them alone will I give a place to dwell in my abode." So Vishnu modifies Adya's curse without removing any of it. In other words, it still stands that the Brahmins are getting the fruits of hell on their heads. But he modifies it in such a way that it becomes built into the core of the Hindu religion that only those who worship the Brahman will be dear to Vishnu. And that is reflected very definitely in the Hindu scriptures. Kabir said to Dharam Das, "Brahma was pleased when Vishnu said that. O brother, you have finished my mind's pain. Now I am happy," he said. Kal's manipulation. Dharam Das, look at the scope of what was done by Kal. He has deceived all the world by it. He makes the jiva forgetful by making him hopeful and puts him into the troubles of birth after birth. Bali, Harishchandra, Van, Virachan, Kunti's son, and many others were the virtuous renunciate kings. What place did he give to them? All the world, which is under the control of Kal, knows what has happened to them. Everyone knows that they cannot be purified, as Kal controls their intellect by his power. Being in the wave of mind, the Jiva has forgotten, and now he doesn't know how to go back to his own home. Dharamdas said, "Listen, my lord, tell me the story of what happened next. With your grace, I am now able to recognize the deception of Yama. Now I have definitely put my mind at your feet. Giving me the nectar in Shabda form, you have saved me from drowning in this ocean of the world, the Bhuv Sagar, the opposite of the Anurag Sagar. Now tell me the rest of the story, and explain to me how their curses came to an end." Kabir said to Dharamdas, "Gayatri's curse of Adya. Dharamdas, I will tell this to you, the word of inconceivable knowledge. When Gayatri accepted the curse given by her mother, she herself cursed her mother. You will be the mother of those five of whom I will be wife. You will conceive a child without the help of man, and all the world will know this," she said. So both of them suffered the reaction of the cursed. At the appointed time, both of them came in the human body. Special account of the world's creation. After all these happenings, the world is created. This time, 84 lakhs bodies and 4 kinds of creation were formed. Him. First, Mother created the egg-born, and Brahma created the womb-born. Vishnu created the moisture-born, and Mahesh undertook the creation of the seed-born. Then the creation of bodies started. Know him who creates the body. In this way, 4 kinds of creation were spread in all 4 directions. O Dharamdas, now you know the story of creating the 4 kinds of life. Keep it in your mind. And the next big section is called the 4 kinds of life, and it's a long explanation of the 4 kinds and how it relates to the human birth, which we'll go into next week.